Hi, and welcome back to Uncited, the internet's least reliable English lit podcast. I'm Chantel.
And I'm Amy, and I'm wondering why you're doing this so solemnly. Chantel, usually we have more pep in our step.
Well, Amy, there's a lot going on in the world right now, and we just felt like it wouldn't be right to be making jokes this week. So we have Amy's beloved husband, Sam.
Yeah, I'm married. We can make that joke. The I'm married joke is fun.
Is it a joke?
Well, you know, it's one of those, oh, right, that happened kind of thing, you know?
Hi, Sam.
Yes, hello. I am Sam. I will be covering the book we're talking about this week.
Yeah, this week we're going to be talking about the genocide in Palestine. So this is our watermelon episode. So there's a content warning for genocide, killing, racism, faith-based discrimination.
Torture, sexual violence.
Blanket content warning, I guess, I think is where we're going to go with this, because sometimes there are too many to list.
So we hope you'll stick around for this. We know that it's going to be really heavy, but sometimes we need to cover something really heavy.
Chantel and I are English majors. Sam is a landscaping person. What I'm trying to say is we're not experts on the Israel-Palestine relation and conflict. We are not experts in the history. We are not experts in what's going on right now. We are people enough to recognize that there is suffering and there's a lot of nuances. But today we are going to be focusing on, you know, what happened and what is happening in Gaza.
The focus today is from a book called Footnotes in Gaza, and it is about a journalist tracking down the story of a pair of massacres that happened in 1956 in Rafah and Khan Yunis. And he tracked down the stories while he was in Gaza during 2003, while Israel still had settlements there, while Israel was demolishing homes, while the Iraq war was starting, and during the killing of Rachel Corrie, an American who had been there protesting the demolition of Palestinian homes.
I also want to add, you know, like we live in a land that is currently called Canada. It is a settler project as a whole. We live on unceded lands and we sit in a lot of privilege being here and being able to talk about this while not living through it, and we acknowledge that wholeheartedly. There are many ways that we can make, you know, our existence in these lands a little fairer, I guess. But we're always going to be on land that wasn't, you know, given freely, I guess.
Yeah. And like you said, we're not experts, but you don't have to be an expert to stand up against oppression and the killing of innocent people. And there's a lot of Palestinian content creators as well who are experts who are raising awareness about this. And a lot of books like we're going to talk about today. And at the end of the episode, we'll also shout out a bunch of the influencers and content creators from in Gaza and Palestine who are talking about this more in depth. And we're going to use this episode as an opportunity to amplify what they're saying, but it's also our responsibility as people who have somewhere safe to live to educate ourselves about what's going on.
And we don't usually do this, but because it's such an ever-evolving conflict and time right now, we are recording this on November 15th.
The day that Israel invaded Al-Shifa Hospital, the largest hospital complex in Gaza City.
So it's constantly developing. There are over 10,000 Palestinians that have been killed so far, and that number, unfortunately, keeps growing every minute.
It also does not count the 1.3 million, roughly, Gazans who have been displaced internally within Gaza.
And it's going to be a heavy episode, and Chantal and I will be back on our bullshit next week. Thank you for being here and for paying attention if you are still here. And Sam will do his best to give us a rundown of Footnotes in Gaza.
Yes. Footnotes in Gaza is Joe Sacco, a journalist who tells his stories through cartoons, trying to learn the history as much as he could of a pair of massacres that happened in 1956 during the Suez Crisis. And it is not his first time in Palestine. He's been there many times over the years, but this was happening largely during 2003. And it tells the stories that people told him, both of the massacres themselves and the events of their current lives, and both the stories and the events of the people around him while he was in Gaza trying to find as much information as he could. For some background on the author, he's a journalist who's from Malta, grew up in America, and he is Jewish. And like his first work about the Israel-Palestine conflict is very much him wrestling with what he'd been taught about Israel and how it's defending itself. And then the reality he found as he went to Palestine and spoke to people and saw what they were living through under Israeli occupation. And this was happening during the first Intifada in 89 to 93.
Can you explain what Intifada means for the people at home?
Yes. The first and second intifadas were mass uprisings against Israeli occupation that started happening when peace processes were not achieving lasting peace with Israel. So the Palestinians started uprising and fighting back within Palestine rather than international struggles, as they'd done through the 70s and 60s, to attempt to throw off the oppression they were feeling, which for the first intifada led to the Oslo Accords, which Israel immediately disregarded, leading to the second intifada, which led to Israel pulling out of Gaza all the settlers and soldiers occupying and then locking the territory down and having a much harsher treatment of Palestinians in the West Bank. Yeah, I'm not the best expert about the Intifada, but that is a basic rundown of it. But yes, Footnotes in Gaza itself is a story to try and document one of the many massacres that happened, and the title is about that. Like, you go in, this is a massacre that only killed about 112 people, so nobody cares. It's not one that's spoken about, it's not one that's been written about much. It's just a blurb on a piece of paper that gets glossed over as something that didn't happen. So he tried to find the stories to piece together the events of that day as best he could. And yeah, part of the footnotes is in trying to find the story, he finds people talking about other massacres that happened in 67, that happened in 58, and then having to be like, no, this isn't the story I'm looking for. I'm trying to find the story of the massacre in 56. His first book, to get back on track, is very much him reconciling what he was raised to believe about Israel and what he finds in the ground, and then collecting and telling the stories that people share with him through his travels. And it's one that wasn't originally published as a book. It was originally published as a series of comics about the various times in his life as he was working as a journalist more traditionally. And it led to his other books being about the Bosnian genocide, and then later this one, and followed up with Pay the Land, which is a book about the Dene people's attempt at reaching a treaty with the Canadian government up in the Northwest Territories and Yukon.
So like various forms of colonialism and occupation.
Yes, exactly.
That's his niche.
His niche is colonialism.
Also, can I make an aside real quick? I'm going to throw in a joke because I need one. I really hate when I hear like people on podcasts say the word niche, like niche.
That's American.
I hate it.
That's the American way to pronounce
That's not the American way to pronounce it. That's just people pronouncing it wrong.
It is the American way to pronounce it.
It's not. They're pronouncing it wrong.
I don't know what to tell you.
It's wrong nonetheless, because it should be niche, because it comes from the French. But that is my lighthearted aside for today.
People pronouncing it niche are people who learned from reading and never questioned that maybe it's not quite niche.
It's a common enough word.
Let me ask my resident American.
We'll come back to it some other time.
Yeah. But yes, Joe Sacco typically does a lot of traveling journalism, but in his off time, he lives in Portland, and that should tell you the rest about his political views and like life. Portland, Oregon, specifically, because that's a popular city name for some reason.
Is it?
Yeah, there's a Portland, Maine.
Really?
And others.
Hmm. More on America.
Every town name in America that I've heard is the name of like 2 to 3 towns in America. It's wild. It's because they have too many places. When you have 50 some states, you have too many places to name. Jamie yes. says niche.
Well,
so you're right. You're correct.
Yeah.
Which like, it's fine. You can pronounce it niche if you really want to. But like, I've heard people get called out on it and then still not change how they pronounce it. Like to be like, oh, by the way, it's pronounced niche, and they still don't change it. Anyways, beside the point.
Yeah. But yes, the background for the book itself is Joe Sacco wanting to find out the story of like the 1956 massacre, and then traveling to Gaza to pick up as many pieces and collect the stories of the event that he could. And then part of his method of telling the story is to depict himself as he is doing the interviews and interfacing with people, because he is a cartoonist, and that's a big part of how he tells his stories. And a lot of it comes down to contrasting the lives that people are currently living as he meets them with the stories they tell about what happened in the past. And the events of the massacres are essentially Israel got into a war with Egypt to try and take control of the Sinai Peninsula, because both massacres happened during the Suez Crisis, when Egypt was attacked by England, France, and Israel all at once. And after Israel, Britain, and France were forced to leave by America and the UN, they pulled back and in retaliation massacred a lot of people in Palestine and Gaza. And telling those stories when they would otherwise be forgotten parts of history is important to him. And like the events that are happening while he is collecting these stories are also very important to understanding the crisis, because it's during this buildup to the Iraq War, and it's when Rachel Corrie is murdered by the IDF. And those are big events that help paint the picture of how the conflict in Gaza has been going on.
What part marked you the most in Footnotes in Gaza?
It is a man who is recounting the story of the first massacre, the massacre in Rafah, the Egyptian border town.
Where the crossing is.
Yes. And how he was too young to have been gathered up with all the men as like a potential militant, but he was old enough that he was still able to do chores. So he was sent out by his mother to go get water because they've been locked in their house all day. They needed some water. And part of passing where he was going required going past an old fort, and that was where the Israelis had decided to do their massacre. So I am going to read you some pieces from it, because I think it's a good passage for the feel of the story. More than 100 bodies close to the wall, from the beginning of the wall to the end. I put down the jug. Almost 50 years later, Ferris retraces his footsteps to the ruins of the 14th century castle, which now forms one side of the town square. I went to the house of one of my relatives, Alhaj Abdullah. His house was very close to the area. The old man asked his wife to bring a pallet. This is Abdul. This is Anwar. This is Abed. The old man was checking their faces. Ferris leads us through a market. There was once an open area to the cemetery where they took the bodies one by one. I ask him how he feels now, decades later. I feel like I am that child again. And like, these stories are important to remember the crimes that have been committed by Israel, because these are crimes that have been repeated 1,000 times over the last 70 years.
And the entire book is just him like going up to people asking, hey, what do you know about this massacre? And then being like, I have lived through so much trauma. Here are the stories you need to know, because if you don't know them, nobody will.
Yes.
They will only be footnotes in somebody else's story.
Kind of thing. He cannot collect all the stories people have to tell because he only has so much time and so much paper to put words to paper. So he has to frequently tell people, this isn't the story I'm looking for. I'm sorry. And then has to leave.
But he collects them anyways.
They're worth it. Yeah, they are part that are in there, but it's this area of hundreds of thousands of people. He can't have every story that's there, because every story that's there would go from the Nakba to when he is there. Because a good chunk of the end of the book is being in a refugee camp and trying to get stories from people while also navigating Israel demolishing homes, Israel like shooting at people, randomly shelling people, and getting in the crossfire and shot at by the IDF. Because he just happened to be outside that day.
Yeah. I think what's important to remember in all of this is that this all didn't start weeks or months ago. It started decades ago. And these atrocities have been going on for decades. And you can look at maps of Palestine. Like, Palestine has always existed. Palestine was mentioned in, like, Shakespeare plays.
Yeah.
And you can look at maps of Palestine just shrinking and shrinking as Israeli occupation increased.
Yeah. And it's important to remember that Jewish people have always lived there as equals among everyone else who was in there. They were living among Christians, they were living among Muslims, they were living among every other minor religion in the area. It wasn't until Israel started that anyone had any major sustained domination of the area that was supported by like the rest of the world. Because Israel started its apartheid regime at about the same time as South Africa. And they were very closely allied for the entirety of South Africa's history of apartheid.
And important to recognize Canada's role in this, because apartheid was heavily based off of Canadian colonialism over Indigenous First Nations people here.
Yes. The third one I would say is more relevant because it's about Rachel Corrie, was a peace activist who went to Israel in 2003 to protest the demolition of Palestinian homes in Gaza. And in doing so, like, she put herself directly in front of IDF bulldozers that were demolishing homes to destroy tunnels. And in the process of doing so, an IDF bulldozer ran her over and killed her. And she became a martyr for Palestinians because she tried to stop Israel from destroying homes. And Israeli settlers mock her death by making her face into pancakes and things like that.
What?
Because she was trying to stop Palestinian homes from being demolished directly outside of settlements that used to be in Gaza, settlers hate her. She was an American, so this did cause a bit of a diplomatic incident, but it was George Bush's America, so not a big major enough one. But she is still seen as a hero by Palestinians to this day, while still being mocked by Israelis for standing up for Palestinians.
Do you recommend this book for people to learn about the historic context?
I recommend this book as a way to understand the, I can't say current because it's 15 years old now and about a time where he was there 20 years ago, but it is good to understand how we got here.
Well, thank you for bringing that book to us, Sam. I know that was a really tough one. We usually have way more humor in the books that we read, if not in the actual books, in at least our talking about them, but there's no humor in this situation. And if you want to know more about this from people who are actually on the ground, some accounts that you can follow on social media, and we'll also include them in the show notes with the platforms they're on, but almost all of them are on Instagram. A couple of them are on Twitter and TikTok, are Ahmed Hijazi, who is a creator who's speaking out on the impacts of the attacks. Mahmoud Zwader, who's a comedian, or was a comedian, is currently just trying to survive, who's sharing the realities in the city. Motaz Azeza, who's a photojournalist sharing images of the war. Ali Jadala, who's another photographer and a videographer who's been covering the Israeli offensive in Gaza since 2008, and who's also personally lost several family members in the current attacks. Plesta Alakad, this person's account is at @byplestia, is a journalist who's reporting on the attacks. Abor Jala is a video creator. Youssef Mema, who's at JoeGaza93, is an activist and also as a profession is a pediatric nurse, and we know there's a lot going on with the hospitals right now. And then people who are other creators who are not in Gaza, or I wasn't able to confirm that they are, but are reporting on it still, are Mohammed El-Kurd, who's a writer from Jerusalem, and Miriam Abdallah.
There's not a lot of popular U.S. sources that aren't biased towards the Israeli state settler cause. There's a lot of propaganda going around. There's a lot of censorship going around as well. And that's why we encourage you to try and find creators that are first-hand accounts. And when that doesn't work, or if that's not your preferred way of doing things, for whatever reason, the UN, the World Health Organization, Doctors Without Borders, they all have really good informational posts about what's going on because they've been casualties in a lot of the current conflict. There were a lot of refugee camps by the UN that were attacked. There's a lot of hospitals with, Doctors Without Borders that are being attacked. All things that should not be happening. Even if there is a war going on.
Red Crescent.
And the Red Crescent is also a good source. It's kind of like the Red Cross, but
it is just
the Red Cross. Just under a different name. So there's sources out there, to get firsthand information as well.
But it's also worth being careful because this is a conflict involving Israel. There are a lot of Nazis trying to get attention and be heard. So be careful you don't wind up in Nazi spaces hearing their conspiracies and having them spread news. Because there are a lot of them trying to hop on the bandwagon and get attention right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely we condemn the general anti-Semitism that has also always been happening, but that's separate from the Israeli state, which is a colonial state.
Yeah. And I think, there's a lot of Jewish people who are having a lot of understandably big feelings right now about everything that they have to process and, their own safety as well, because anti-Semitism has been rampant forever. And I hope it's obvious, not calling for anti-Semitism, that is very bad. And we do not want Jewish people to be targeted because that would also be very bad. I think the existence of the conflict and the occupation in Gaza and in Palestine does not negate the fact that the Holocaust did happen and there is a lot of trauma there and there's still a lot of anti-Semitism in the world. It doesn't negate that fact, but there was an open air prison and there now it's, still is. And as you're not supposed to bomb people, you're asking to evacuate through a specific route. So genocide, no matter who it's against, is still genocide.
Essentially, if you're on the side of compassion and standing up against genocide and oppression, you're always going to be on the same side.
Yeah.
So I think that's going to do it for us this week. Sorry that this one was so heavy, but sometimes it needs to be. Thank you so much, Sam, for talking about this.
Of course.
And we hope to see you in 2 weeks. And that's it.
And as always, we're excited and available. Keep the pause.